Hello, and welcome to the Gospel Bluth. My name is Lily Mastrodemus. I am not an artist or a filmmaker or a cinephile of any means. I'm just somebody who thought she enjoyed the movies of Don Bluth and was briefly redeemed, and then I feel immediately betrayed again. Today's film is the 1999 classic, Bartok the Magnificent. And my special guest today is a dear, dear friend, a graphic designer by day and an illustrator also by day slash night. it's my very good friend, Laura Marciniak. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Sorry for laughing. That's true. I do several things during the day.
It's more than I do. Laura, what's your deep personal relationship with Don Bluth?
Funny. Actually, it's Anastasia and Bartok himself. He was one of my favorite characters when I was a kid. I enjoyed his hi-yas. And his what was it? I'll give him a 1, a 2, and a 3. And I had a little as you know, most children do, a little Bartok plush toy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was able to obsess over a small white bat, and I think that's just nice.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you there. I think anytime you get to obsess over a small white bat is kind of a good deal.
I agree.
Yeah. I do also love, I mean, Bartok has the classic line, and then I kicked her, sir. I also love that he is a definitely a white sports fan from Chicago.
Yeah. His Russian accent is like a Chicago one.
It's like a guy. Bartok is a guy at a dive bar who's just like there while you're loading in for a gig and goes, "Ah, oh, what's this in? Oh, your pieces of shit moving in. What are you doing?"
Yeah, he has like confident short guy energy for sure, I think.
He really does, which also yeah. I feel like is something he struggles with in Bartok the Magnificent.
I agree. much like someone with a complex, Bartok also finds himself in situations that might be a little bit too big for his britches. Mm-hmm. Like fighting a dragon or perhaps saving a young czar. Who knows?
But who knows?
It's that sort of tenacity that attracts me to our little white bat friend.
I insist that we only refer to him as our little white bat friend. Because he's adorable. He's an adorable little fella.
I think that the Wikipedia identifies him as albino, so yes. You know, that's a pretty rare genetic mutation, which I think is funny.
He's a hero for the children to look up to, you know. He's mm-hmm. he's a hero for all of us. Speaking of Bartok the Magnificent, let's get into this plot. So it's very simple, folks. There's nothing really difficult about it. Essentially, Bartok the Magnificent. Bartok, this is a prequel, I should also mention, a prequel to Anastasia.
Yeah, that took me a while to figure out.
Yeah, they don't really make it clear. I feel like they kind of they kind of trusted their audience to know that, like, what the events that started in Anastasia being the Bolshevik Revolution kind of like ended the monarchy in Russia.
Right. But
I don't think, you know, young kids are going to know that. I think they're going to be like, oh, Bartok left Rasputin and now he's meeting another prince.
It's yeah.
Like, honey, no, all the monarchs in Russia were brutally murdered.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But that's a story for another time. So Bartok the Magnificent, he's a street performer slash possible con man who loves to be showered in gold. And one evening, the young prince of the young czar of Russia, who is living in Moscow, is kidnapped by the witch Baba Yaga. And then, in seeking a rescuer, two women nominate Bartok and his friend Zosie the bear to save the czar. So they go to the Iron Forest to rescue the czar from Baba Yaga, the famous witch. And she sets him out on three tasks before telling him where the prince is. There's also a moment where Bartok lashes out at her, accusing her of lying and cheating and claiming that everyone hates her. And
yeah,
Baba Yaga starts crying.
babushka riddles are often frustrating. I feel for Bartok. However, it was very mean how he treated our beloved Baba Yaga.
And she is so misunderstood in this movie.
I agree.
Yeah. She ends up giving him a potion that will help him out, and he returns to Moscow, where the young czar's, I guess, assistant, Ludmilla, has essentially taken over the throne. And then they find the prince locked up in the tower, and Ludmilla throws them into the pit in the tower and drinks this potion that Baba Yaga gives to Bartok. She turns into a dragon. After seeing her reflection, Ludmilla's mind degrades to a mere beast. This is a quote from the Wikipedia. And she goes on a rampage, burning the town with her fiery breath. Zosie rescues Bartok. Bartok battles Ludmilla and tricks her into climbing a tower. And when she reaches the top, it crumbles and crushes her. And then Zosie hails Bartok as a true hero for beating Ludmilla and also showing Baba Yaga compassion. Bartok returns Ivan's ring. Oh yeah, there was a ring involved, I guess. Essentially, Bartok saves a prince.
The Romanovs love their jewels.
Romanovs famously love their jewels.
Yeah. Such interesting casting. Well, as with many Bluth films. Like Kelsey Grammer's the bear. I don't know how to say his name.
Zosie. Yes. So Kelsey Grammer as Zosie the bear, who is an actor. He's like a classically trained actor, and he makes sure you know it because he has mustache and a waistcoat.
I hope he's method, and I hope that he really embodied Zosie for the recording of this film.
I hope he spent as much time with real bears as possible.
Real Russian bears.
And then of course Hank Azaria reprising his role as Bartok the Chicago Bat. Hank Azaria also co-produced this movie, so thank you Hank really? Area. Yes.
Wow. Okay. Go off, King.
Go off, King. Oh. And Catherine O'Hara, who I did not know was in this movie, as our villain Ludmilla. She's really given it her all, and I really love and respect her for that.
I think she does a really good job being villainous because, I mean, I think the only other movie that I remember her voice acting in was The Nightmare Before Christmas as Sally, where she plays like a sort of sweet character. And here she's like acting like one of my aunts. So like, you love to see range, you know?
Yeah. And I love a queen with range. And then we've got Andrea Martin as Baba Yaga. If you don't know her by name, watch My Big Fat Greek Wedding. She's one of the aunts. She goes, oh, vegetarian? That's okay. I make lamb. She's also just classic. And then also Tim Curry, who just happens to appear as a giant talking skull.
Yes.
Not quite sure what was going on there.
Perfectly cast.
Laura, I want to know what your initial thoughts on this movie were.
I don't think I had seen this since I was little. So this is basically like watching it for the first time. It was really difficult to get through. But it also had that sort of animation that like early computer, like generated animation that was, I think was featured a bit in Anastasia, but it was a little bit jarring to see like a computer generated Tim Curry, but you know, in a good way.
Yeah, that's, you bring up a really good point, which is that like the animation style in this movie seemed so disjointed. Like,
yes.
I think with Anastasia, like the computer animation worked really well because it was so kind of sparse, and whenever it was there, they did like a good job making sure that like it matched with the movie and the scene, and that it like was a part of it. And I feel like
in
this one, it was just like the world was already so empty. Like the world that they animated was already so empty. So whenever there was like a computer animation bit, it just was jarring.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, not to compare a Bluth to a Bluth, but I think I recall the sort of computer animation stuff in Anastasia to be rotating views of landscapes, when here it was used to animate certain characters or certain moving things, which I think sort of poked holes in the overall continuity of the animation.
Yeah.
I totally agree that it was a little bit disjointed as visually. Plot wise, rock solid.
let's chat about this plot. I have so many questions about, because okay, I know it's supposed to be like a simple movie. It's like very like, you know, Bartok's going to save the king or the czar and defeat the evil villain. And I feel like that, like the writer, because there was just one, thought that they were being super clever by being like, oh, you think Baba Yaga's the villain, but actually it's the lady, Ludmilla. Out of curiosity, what did you think Ludmilla's like governmental role was when we first met her?
I wasn't too sure. I assume she was family because that's how royalty works. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I just was like, oh, this is probably an advisor, like a chaperone. I don't know. What did you think?
I also thought, like, you know, she a mother or
right.
sister or like a lover, or is she, I guess. And then I finally landed on advisor, but there was like absolutely nothing to tell us that, which is troubling. And then, you know, the czar is just like Dimitri from Anastasia, but small, and they gave him just like a little bit of a longer nose. But yeah, it's Dimitri.
Wow. Yeah, I as a prequel, yeah, I don't know if it gives us any more insight to the Romanov family. But it is good to see the origins of our albino friend.
Yes, yes, it's yes. And I wanted to figure out the timeline of right. this movie, because it is a prequel. And, you know, when we watch Anastasia, you know, obviously it begins in like 1918, and like having that like be like the Russian Revolution is like where we begin our story in Anastasia. And in mm-hmm. this movie, we know that it takes place mostly in Moscow,
right?
And we're told that the czar's name is Ivan, and yes. that he's a Romanov. So I did some digging.
Yep.
So the Ivan that Wikipedia links within the Bartok the Magnificent article was never a czar in the first place.
He was so in the movie, he was Ivan a czar or a czar to be, and this is why there was the plot, like there was some sort of maybe like power transfer that his advisor wanted, or
yeah, it's like
she... And does that match up with history? We must know.
Well, it's like, so Ludmilla like calls him the prince, but then that like little kid goes crying right. up to Bartok and is like, please save my czar, which is like
totally something a little kid in itinerant era Russia would do.
Truly like a crazy thing for a child to say. So the Ivan that's linked in the Wikipedia article was the uncle of Tsar Michael I, who was the first Romanov Tsar of Russia.
Okay.
And that he would have, he died in 1640. So,
okay. All right.
So if that's, and then there was like another.
This is Romanov a really, czar. Really early prequel then.
Yeah. And it's like
an old bat.
This is an ancient bat. And like there was, I think, another, Romanov czar who was like Ivan something or other, but yeah,
so you know, we could say loosely based in reality
we are to believe that Bartok the Great is
300 years old.
Over 300 years old.
as a biologist, does that check out?
I would love to say yes, but bats generally have a lifespan of only 30 years.
Wow, that's a lot longer than I assumed.
Right? It's very cool. Scientists are trying to figure out what makes them live longer so then we can live longer. And I don't think we should live longer, but that's a story for another time.
I think I agree there. So, and then, so that is Bartok, what kind of bat would you say he is, if any?
Great question. So I'm going to see which, what kind of bats live in Russia. Bats of Russia. Let's see.
How common is albinism in bats, if at all? Have you seen it in your field research?
I have not, but I would love to one day.
I hope you will, and that you'll share it with me.
Thank you so much. I will. Well, I did find, okay, so there isn't a lot of like information that comes up right away about the species of bats that live in Russia. In fact, one of the things that came up first was something about Russia's forgotten bats. But there is a bat called the Brandt's myotis that lives mostly in Siberia. And
okay,
it's really cool because a male of this species is the oldest bat and oldest small mammal ever documented.
Wow.
He has lived at least 41 years in the wild.
41.
Which is crazy old for a bat. And
gosh, maybe like Bartok is an allegory for immortality.
Maybe.
I hope Bartok is really just a middle-aged Chicago guy. Like a 41-year-old small man.
Just like a little fella. He's just angry and anxious. Well, I did find a big old list of all the bats in Russia, and there are a lot of bats in Russia, so he could be any of these.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ivan, it might not be real, Bartok might not be real, but their message certainly is.
It resonates, and even though Bartok is small, he becomes the hero that he always wanted to be. And thank God he had his bear friend Zosie to like remind him of that and just kind of keep him humble.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think I sort of relate to his character a little bit because have some sort of sympathy for him because he's like sort of like a class clown or something. But it seems like, you know, that audacious behavior is like a projection of his anxiety. Like this is a thing, like this is an act he's putting on so that he can seem larger than he is.
Yeah. And like the way too that he like experiences and interacts with all these crazy things around him, like he, and even in Anastasia, like he meets all of these like crazy one, like crazy supernatural magical beings, and he's just like, oh great, oh excuse me, you ugly cat, like, you know, he's like insulting them and kind of being like, another day on the job. It's like a beleaguered babysitter or something.
Right, he's seen it all, and he just needs to do his thing, and Baba Yaga is making him do riddles.
Bartok is like a character in Cheers, I think. yeah, let's talk about Baba Yaga. So Baba Yaga, obviously, we love her. We respect her. She's the witch who lives in the house that rests upon chicken legs. And she eats kids. That's something that she is famous for. And here we learn that she has a softer side to her. I will say, I think her song was maybe the only one that I really liked in.
Yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah, the songs were really pushing it in general. I did like his intro, you know, the namesake.
Mm-hmm.
Bartok the magnificent song, but yeah, but you're right. I think Baba Yaga for me personally really stole the show. Again, another example of people not looking like what they seem.
Mm-hmm.
A good lesson for children of all ages.
All ages. And you know, I really also relate to the message of her song in particular. It's like, somebody's in my house and I'm gonna find who it is, because nobody should be in my house.
I think that's fair. You know, this is before the Ring doorbell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you simply just had chicken bone spells or whatever to find who's in your house,
and you really just had to walk around shouting, who's in my house?
We can relate. People push you away long enough, you kind of just become a witch in your little house that you don't want other people in.
Yeah.
And honestly, respect.
And also, like, I kind of want that for myself. Like,
I
want to be a witch.
Yeah, I mean, she, you know, she had her little, what, Jennifer Tilly snake friend.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, another excellent casting choice, in my opinion.
Really great casting. Jennifer Tilly really puts her all into playing this vile little pink snake creature who stretches beyond physical comprehension. But yeah, major respect for Jennifer Tilly. Also, this pet, Baba Yaga's little pet being just like a pink snake thing named Pilaf. I think I waited for so long to watch this movie because I hated how Pilaf looked.
She's not like hot like the Space Jam.
Like Baba Yaga? Oh yeah.
like Baba Yaga's thick character. No, yeah, she's like really off-putting, and like, she's not hot, you know, or she's not cute. She's just really a wretched looking snake with a ponytail.
She's got like a top pony, and like, she wears like a bell, and when you first meet her, like, her ass is stuck to a frozen rock on like a pillar. It's just all, and then like, he keeps tugging at her and she just, it's gross. She's vile, a vile little thing.
It makes little sense to me.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, Jennifer Tilly can do no wrong in my book.
She's great. Like, I just love her. But yeah, like, fuck Pilaf. I hated everything about her.
I was confused. Yeah, I for some reason assumed Pilaf was a gendered name. Like, I thought it was gonna be like another little boy character. I was like, no, not another little boy in this movie. I can't take it.
not another little boy that just looks like Dimitri, because Don Bluth only knows how to draw one type of guy.
There's only one, to be fair, there's only one type of guy.
True, and it is the Dimitri type of guy.
Yep.
Don Bluth looks at men who don't look like that and go, I don't get it. This looks wrong to me.
Men are Dimitri and women are long pink snakes with ponytails, I'm pretty sure.
The two genders, yeah.
The two genders. Yeah. There's, you know, there's a spectrum between those two. And that it's basically the Bluth universe.
Yeah, it's the Bluthiverse, if you will. yeah, it's which is just a vile, wretched thing.
Yep. I also just, I love the idea of like American depictions of Russia. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
To see like how Don Bluth interprets peasants or royalty, and you know, there's little things like what Catherine O'Hara says, like do svidaniya at one point, and it's just like it's just like Russian enough to not be threatening in a
mm-hmm.
in the American context, you know, how I mean, this is post-Cold War when this came out, but you know, there's always a little Ruski fear.
Yeah, like the tension is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think they tried to like kind of cut that kind of Russian tension a little bit more with this movie, because it is set far before the Russian Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And like the world that it's set in doesn't feel like Russia. It feels like a magical land, and it's only Russia in name. So I think adding that kind of level of fantasy to it kind of makes it more palatable and more accessible for younger audiences and, you know, whoever is watching with those younger audiences. So it's like, oh, Russia's not that bad.
But it's right.
Like, yeah. It's like, hey, maybe let's cool it on the Red Scare kind of mentality.
Right. Yeah. No, totally agree. This isn't Russia as we know it. This is a mythical, magical Brothers Grimm-esque land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bluth westernization of the most eastern part of Russia is just a little funny.
It's also like, you know, you mentioned like how Don Bluth sees peasants. Like there's one point where Ludmilla goes like, ah, people of Russia, like people of Moscow. And there's a shot on the crowd and there's like a max 50 people there.
There might have been, historically, there might have only been 50 people in that town.
It's like, damn, it's
in
like
Moscow.
In Moscow, it's like Moscow's a big fucking city. Like,
yeah, with like tons of different people.
Yeah. But no, only 50 people live there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is true. This is our mythical Russia. And I hope that when we visit there, we come across a witch.
And I am glad that you know, you bring up our trip to Russia.
We're always talking about
this. We're always talking about it. We're gonna track down Rasputin's thing, and it's gonna be
that's another thing that like I enjoy the myth of Rasputin and also the man. Mm-hmm. And the idea that like this ridiculous thing was like, also a man.
It's like the unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but it's the unkillable Rasputin.
And so my logic is, if Rasputin was mythicized in Don Bluth's Anastasia and was also real, that means Tim Curry as a floating skull is also real, right?
Yeah, I think by that logic, the Tim Curry skull is real. Baba Yaga is real.
Right. There's got to be a screaming Tim Curry skull out there.
Do you think the bear in that skull, like,
There's some hand motions going on.
Do you think, do you think they like they did things?
How else would it have gone? There's no other. They must have at least kissed.
I mean, Zosie was all about the riddles. He solved all of the riddles. And like the skull was definitely impressed. And like I feel like he wasn't letting Zosie in, if only so he could get to know him a little better. I don't know.
Sometimes, you know, people, like little kids, pull the pigtails of the girl that they like, you know. And I think the screaming skull was yanking Zosie's mustache, if you know what I mean. Little bit.
That thin, tiny mustache, that was so Zosie looked disgusting. I'm sorry. Everything about the animation in this movie, other than other than Bartok and maybe Baba Yaga, was just like vile.
Just so unattractive. Like but Zosie was like, he had like that Vivaldian mustache, like an old like Art Deco era actor or something.
Yeah, and like a big sickly red nose that was just like, why? So many mammals in Don Bluth movies look so sickly and gross, where it's almost a theme at this point, where it's like every dog is gonna look thin and ill and on death's bed, and there's gonna be a lump somewhere, and like bears are gonna have nose that protrude upwards. It hurts. As someone who has a deep respect for animals, it hurts, because then I can't look at what he's drawn.
The liver spots on Bartok, I've always thought, were especially gruesome.
They are. You're totally right. They're not freckles, they're liver spots.
They're straight up just like age spots.
Which just confirms the fact that he's somebody's old uncle who lives in like a basement on like the east side of Chicago or something.
Doesn't see sun, it's too snowy.
Absolutely not. Oh my god, you're blowing my mind. Also, like the scene where Ludmilla drinks the potion, and it's like three different shots of this liquid going down her gullet, and we just like see her drink this, and it's I felt ill watching it. It was so gross. She's like, I feel like they directed Catherine O'Hara to be like, okay, make the worst slurping, gurgling sounds you possibly can. And she was like, all right, like I guess I will.
Yeah, anything sort of like organic or natural, you know, bodily that happens in blue films is so gross. But like kind of normal seeming, I don't know, at least when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, this is how everyone like eats food or something.
Yeah, well, he's got such a way of animating faces, especially mouths, where like mouths are so floppy and loose.
It's like, yeah, he's a skin guy.
He really is, though. Don Bluth is a skin guy.
He knows how to draw like loose skin.
Oh god, you're totally right, but I hate that you are.
I'm sorry. But yeah, I think the skin and mouth thing are so characteristic of Don Bluth.
Yeah. And that is like a very like telltale sign that we're, that, you know, you're watching a Duth film,
that's a pretty good, this is a Duth podcast.
The gospel Duth, the gospel Duth.
Yeah, I mean, he does the same thing with clothes too. They're so like, fabric is also so floppy, like characters are drawn with large like their clothes are always larger than them.
Yeah.
Especially like little kids, things like that. Yeah,
Yeah.
Don Bluth loved the floppy nature of like fabric and skin.
The man just likes anything that hangs loose.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, make it move.
No shame. We don't shame skin kinks in this.
No, but we this is a non kink shaming organization that I've got here.
Except for I think there should be a little shame for Pilaf. That was too much.
Was unacceptable. Like that was an
Yeah.
unacceptable thing.
It's just the most like flaccid, literally flaccid character.
And just like when he would pull her and she would get like lumpy and just like
Disgusting.
why is this happening?
Just like, yeah,
Oh.
there's a lot of like, yeah, very very sensory illustrator.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And like without the computer animation, like all of the quote unquote hand drawn, because I think at this point it was less hand drawn and more like they were using computers, but computer animation versus like the hand drawn style, like I think the latter looked really good at like I think it was continuing his work with Anastasia, where everything was vibrant and fluid and loose and floppy and just like
Yeah.
moved really well to the point where like it almost what's the word I'm trying to say? It almost like honored the original animation styles of like the 20s or 30s, where it was like it had to be hand drawn and it had to be perfect and it had to move a certain way. But yeah, throw that like shitty and like almost half of it, not maybe not almost half of it, but a good percentage of this movie was computer animated. And it's like not necessary. And I made me so mad because it took me out of it. And I know we talked about it already, but now I'm thinking about it again and I'm getting riled up and
Yeah, no,
mad.
you're allowed to, because it is jarring. I agree. I don't know. That era, the like late 90s, was I think a time where people felt like we have this technology, we could use it, but like maybe they shouldn't have. You
Yeah.
know.
I mean, like Titan AE, Iron Giant, like I think even Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron had a degree of that kind of mixed animation where it's like, is it necessary? Does it help with the story? I'm not a professional, so I don't know, but I know how it makes me feel.
Right. And I think that's valid because it's right. Like, you know, you it it's different from the other, like the entire movie except for these one little things. And it really brings you out. So if you're listening, Don Bluth, do it again, please.
I need a redo, Donnie Boy.
It
I
did
Don,
look cool though. It's
yeah.
just when the two are together, it's a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah, I agree. Don Bluth is 84 years old. I would Don, if you are listening, I'd love to have you on a chat and just ask you about some of your choices. Because you've made a lot of them, my good sir.
I want to ask him about the skin thing.
I want to ask him, oh yes, I want to know about the skin thing and the clothes thing. I want to know why he has so many like Christ children in his movies. And I want to know, hey buddy, what's the deal with the color coding? And hey buddy, what's the deal with all these sexy hot animals?
So many unanswered questions.
I need him on.
I feel like he's gonna George R. R. Martin us and just never give us any final answers.
And honestly, I think that's okay because I don't know if I can handle any of those any of the answers to those questions in particular. I think it would just be upsetting.
Yeah. I agree. Sometimes the truth is a little too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially in context of Bartok the Magnificent. Which I assume is named after the famous Hungarian composer Béla Bartók. I just assume.
I would think you're right. I would think you're correct in that.
Right? They're both performers.
Were they both bats?
They were both bats, yes.
Okay,
yeah, great. Both white bats.
Okay, good. Just wanted to clear that up. I do, like, I want to, like, I guess part of me wants to know, like, did Bartok really, like, say, like, you know, that intro song at the beginning of the movie, he's telling us about all of his exploits, and he's telling us, oh, he's, like, killed this thing, and he saved this village, and, oh, on the schedule, he's got a Hydra he has to go kill. Do you think he really did that, or is he straight up just, like, a performer slash con man? Because we know he fakes it with the bear. We know he fakes it when he's lifting that 10,000 pound anvil weight, I guess. But yeah, like there's I don't know.
I think with the reason why most convicts, the reason why most con men are so convincing is because their lies have a little bit of truth to them. So maybe it wasn't the Hydra that our beloved Bartók defeated. Maybe it was, you know, like a little cockroach or something.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'd like to believe that it's true. You know, sometimes faith is more powerful than the actual truth. So Don Bluth, you can keep this secret.
Amen. Amen to that. Yeah, I feel like this movie relies heavily on context clues. Excuse me. And
yeah.
For like an audience, for like if your target audience is like mostly young children, they're not really going to get that.
I mean, as an adult, I was a little confused. But...
No, yeah, no, exactly. There's a lot of like stuff that we had to like figure out on our own.
However, it did look really cool. You know, there was a ton of action in the movie.
So much action. Bartok, for being so small, really delivers a wallop.
Yep.
Also, like, one thing that I wanted to just, like, bring up is how in the beginning, like, Bartok, like, fights the bear, fights Zozi, and, like, the whole time the Tsar is watching this happen and is, like, not doing anything about it. And then when...
He's like, this is so cool.
Yeah, he's this sick.
This is funny, yay. Okay. And then, you're acting like a real Tsar.
You fucking monarch. And then, like, Bartok, like, beats the bear, and Ivan goes, thank you for helping my people. It's like, motherfucker, you were right there. You're the Tsar.
Yeah, it's a lot like when you see those photos of Justin Trudeau marching, like, in protest. Like, you're the dude in charge. Like, if you want to change something, you could do it.
Yeah. No, exactly. And, like, to, like, follow up with that, then, like, you know, Ludmilla is saying, like, oh, why do you like Bartok? Like, what's his big thing? And the Tsar goes, like, don't you see the people smiling? It's like, it's good to see them laugh and smile. How fucking dark is that? Like, again, my dude, you're the guy in charge. Why are they miserable?
Like, I know, yeah, like, you, like, these people are starving and you just threw a ruby ring at a bat.
But yeah, when you put it that way, it's pretty upsetting.
Makes you wanna revolt a little bit.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna have to start planning 300 years in advance.
I do love the idea of Bartok being so old.
Yeah, it's chilling. It's almost chilling. Like, part of me wonders, like, oh, maybe they thought that, like, Bartok would be, like, this prequel would take place right before the Russian Revolution.
That's what I would assume.
Yeah.
Because that's what most prequels do.
Exactly. But if you're going to make Anastasia so, not historically accurate, but, like, have these characters that are based on real people like Rasputin, Alexandra, like even the names of Anastasia's family members, like if you're gonna make a prequel, at least try to see who came like immediately before, or have an explanation as to bless you, as to why this bat is 300 plus years old.
I personally think that there should be more prequels to this franchise.
What do you think happened after this? Like, okay, how do you think Bartok met Rasputin?
Right, that's hard to say. I mean, he's such a man of fate. I mean, a bat of fate that, you know, it's, I mean, I have a few ideas I could, you know, we should call up Bluth and write to them our prequel ideas. do you have any ideas as to how Bartok met Rasputin?
I mean, I feel like, you know, Baba Yaga is an old witch. I don't think she's eternal, but I think she's old enough where she'll stick around for a little bit. And I feel like maybe after, you know, hanging up his wings for the performer aspect of his life, he went to go see Baba Yaga. Maybe she gave him like another potion, or like, or just like made him fall asleep for a few years, because she was like, you're gonna die soon and I like having you around. So and then Rasputin comes in and he's like, hey, I F everything that moves, Baba Yaga. Like, let's get it on. And then that's how they meet. And Bartok and Rasputin really hit it off and like find out they have a lot in common. And they have just like a really good chemistry, like a coworker chemistry.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Baba Yaga has to be involved.
Yeah, and like even the way that like her world is animated is very similar to Rasputin's. Mm-hmm. So it's like very green and bulbous and
right, like toxic looking.
Yeah. So there has to be something there. Wait, what if in this universe Rasputin is the son of Baba Yaga and has inherited Bartok?
That makes a lot of sense, because Rasputin was like sort of a wizard in Anastasia. So, I mean, thread found. It's right there. It's right in front of our eyes.
We were foolish to...
It turns out Baba Yaga is actually the first Polly person, not Rasputin. Contrary to popular belief,
Baba Yaga was actually looking for her unicorn the entire time.
No. Baba Yaga saw you from across the bar and thought you looked really interesting.
Baba Yaga saw you across the bar and really liked your vibe.
God.
Oh, just
well.
So this movie does not have a lot of fun facts, because it was a direct release to VHS. I know IHOP started selling two versions of Bartok as part of the promotion. You could get a Bartok puppet or a turban Bartok with any pancake purchase. So, that's exciting.
I think I had a turban Bartok.
I think I had the finger puppet.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I recall the finger puppet. I never had one. I was always very, very jealous.
I really wanted the turban one because it's like a little bat with a hat. It's
Little
cool.
bat with a
Bat
hat.
with a hat. The film received neutral reviews. December 8th, 2004, so 5 years after this movie comes out.
Wow.
Someone wrote, "This uninspired but mercifully short adventure will hold some amusement for little kids but bore everyone else."
Oh,
Some
damn.
someone else wrote, "Tykes will likely be charmed by the brisk pacing, vibrant, albeit stereotypical characters, and engaging storyline, while parents may be especially grateful for a cartoon with a much better production values than Pokemon." Just,
I
shots
love that
fired.
comparison. Yeah, seriously.
I mean, little creatures going on adventure.
Yeah.
I think that works.
That's a whole nother episode to dissect what was just said.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That'll be part two of this. And then I think my favorite review said the trades, I guess, which is a publication, questioned its very existence, saying, "I am sure what reason the spinoff was made, but regardless, it was a well done one." And then the Dallas Morning News, just to close things off. So Dallas Morning News notes, "Bartok the Magnificent does even more disservice to Russian history than Anastasia did."
I don't disagree.
I think that is absolutely fair.
Yeah, we touched on the bluefication of Russia in this earlier.
Yeah. And the very last fun fact, because again, there are not many. It was nominated for Outstanding Achievement in an Animated Home Video Production at the 28th Annie Awards in 2000, but lost to Disney's An Extremely Goofy Movie.
Also a great film.
fantastic film.
Hey, you can't compare apples to oranges,
No, you really can't. And like in a weird way, at that moment in history, like Bartok was in a league of its own. It was one of the first, and I think we can appreciate all that this movie gave us for that. But I do have to agree with the trades review. Why was it ever made?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we know why, but of all of the small creatures in all of the animated movies, I'm glad that Bartok, the little white bat, was able to have his own film.
I agree. Honestly, it's great bat representation. Great, great, ang great anxiety disorder representation.
Yes. Not enough of that. And he was functioning with his GAD and panic disorder, and it was fine.
Yeah.
Makes you think anything's possible.
I think he's a hero for that.
I
Laura, do you have anything you want to plug? Where can people
plug.
find you or your beautiful
Oh.
art? I
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, sorry, I
Yeah,
forgot to
for
mention I'm a podcaster now, so I have
Oh yeah.
to ask questions.
No, I often I forget that this is how people know of things. The is, like we have to share it. I have an Instagram. It's at Woof Yeah. WOOF Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, I have a website, but I don't know. That's it. Thank you.
Laura's a great artist. Everyone should check out her work. She's just a wonderful human being, and I'm glad that we're friends.
Oh, thank you, Lily.
That's my
glad we're friends.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're friends too. You should plug your music school.
Oh yeah. So thank you for reminding me, Laura. I'm offering guitar lessons, and I also do guitar repairs if you live in Brooklyn. But you can follow me on Instagram at Lily's Music Stop, all one word, or shoot me an email, lilies.music.stop@gmail.com. And I will get back to you within 1 to 2 business days.
I like that. Lily's an incredible musician, writer, and all-around person.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
Laura is just a wonderful human being and a supremely talented artist and a fantastic skater and a great
thank you. I do love to shred
the gnar. Laura, thank you so much for being on this wicked thing.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. It's great to talk about our Russian American bat friend.
Bless him. wherever he is now, because I'm sure he's still alive.
Yep. He's just in his mom's house in Chicago.
That's exactly where he is.
Yeah.
Laura, thank you. I love you. And
thank you. Love you too, bro.
Oh, bro. Folks, I'll thanks for listening. Like, subscribe, whatever. This nothing matters. I'll see you somewhere out there.